role models, and as a kind of masculine counterweight to my mother, grandmother, aunt, and 5 female cousins with whom I lived. The bar provided me with all the men I needed, and 1 or 2 men who were the last thing I needed. Long before it legally served me, the bar saved me. It restored my faith when I was a boy, tended me as a teenager, and when I was a young man, the bar embraced me. While I fear that we're drawn to what abandons us, and to what seems most likely to abandon us, in the end, I believe we're defined by what embraces us. Naturally, I embraced the bar right back, until one night the bar turned me away. And in that final abandonment, the bar saved my life. There had always been a bar on that corner, by one name or another, since the beginning of time, or the end of Prohibition, which were the same thing in my hard-drinking hometown, Manhasset, Long Island. In the 1930s, the bar was a stop-off for movie stars on their way to the nearby yacht clubs and posh ocean resorts. In the 1940s, the bar was a haven for soldiers coming home from the wars. In the 1950s, the bar was a lounge for greasers and their poodle-skirted girlfriends. But the bar didn't become a landmark, a patch of hallowed ground, until 1970, when Steve bought the place and renamed it Dickens. Above the door, Steve hung a silhouette of Charles Dickens, and below the silhouette, he spelled out the name in old English lettering, Dickens. Such a blatant display of Anglophilia didn't sit well with every Kevin Flynn and Michael Gallagher in Manhasset. They let it slide only because they so thoroughly approved of Steve's cardinal rule of the barroom, every third drink free. Also, it helped that Steve hired 7 or 8 members of the O'Malley clan to bus his tables, and that he took pains to make Dickens look as though it had been shipped brick by brick from County Donegal. Steve intended his bar to look like a European public house, but to feel quintessentially American, an honest-to-God house for the public, his public. In the heart of Manhasset, a pastoral suburb of 8,000 people, 17 miles southeast of Manhattan, Steve wanted to create a sanctuary where his neighbors and friends and fellow drinkers, and especially his high school buddies coming home from Vietnam, could savor a feeling of safety and return. In every venture, Steve was confident of success. Confidence was his most attractive quality and his tragic flaw. But with Dickens, he surpassed his greatest expectations. Manhasset quickly came to see Steve's bar as the bar. Just as we said the city to mean New York City and the street to mean Wall Street, we always said the bar, presumptively, and there was never any confusion about which bar we meant. Then, imperceptibly, Dickens became something more than the bar. It became the place, the preferred shelter from all life storms. In 1979, when the nuclear reactor at 3 Mile Island melted down and fear of apocalypse swept the Northeast, many Manhassetites phoned Steve to reserve space in the airtight basement below his bar. Of course, everyone had their own basements, but there was just something about Dickens. People thought of it first whenever doomsday loomed. Along with Sanctuary, Steve provided nightly lessons in democracy, or the special plurality of alcohol. Standing in the middle of his barroom, you could watch men and women from all strata of society educating and abusing one another. You could hear the poorest man in town discussing market volatility with the president of the New York Stock Exchange, or the local librarian lecturing a New York Yankees Hall of Famer about the wisdom of choking up on the bat. You could hear a feeble-minded porter say something so peculiar and wise that a college philosophy professor would jot it on a napkin and tuck it in his pocket. You could hear bartenders, in between making bets and mixing pink squirrels, talk like philosopher kings. Steve believed the corner bar to be the most egalitarian of all American gathering places, and he knew that Americans have always venerated their bars, saloons, taverns, and gin mills, one of his favorite expressions. He knew that Americans invest their bars with meaning and turn to them for everything from glamour to succor, and above all for relief from that scourge of modern life, loneliness. He didn't know that the Puritans, upon landing in the New World, built a bar even before they built a church. He didn't know that American bars descend directly from the medieval inns of Chaucer's Canterbury Tales, which descended from the Saxon alehouses, which descended from the taberni along the roads of ancient Rome. Steve's bar could trace its lineage all the way back to the painted caves of Western Europe, where Stone Age elders initiated young boys and girls into the ways of the tribe nearly 15,000 years ago. Though Steve didn't know these things, he sensed them in his blood and enacted them in everything he did.